This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Let me give you a programming note. The holiday coming up on Monday, Veterans Day, we will have an OTB live on Monday afternoon. So mark that on the calendar. We'll be in the studio for some racing thoughts on Monday afternoon. There's also a match bet promotion down here at the Clubhouse Racebook if you'd like to swing down here on Monday afternoon. On this Saturday, however, a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Dan Smith, part of the media team at Del Mar. We'll get some thoughts on the Del Mar meet that opened yesterday and continues 15 racing days, including yesterday, so 14 at this point, and goes through December 1st. A lot of nice stakes on the schedule at Del Mar again. We'll talk a little bit about that with Dan Smith a little bit later on. But last Tuesday down under, Monday night here, the Melbourne Cup, one of the obviously more important races on the calendar on the globe, and a guy who follows racing not only keenly here in the United States, but keenly down under as well, our friend Dick Powell. And I thought I'd invite Dick on. That would give me a chance to show the Melbourne Cup, which was a ding-dong race. Dick, good morning.
Good eye, mate.
Yeah, there you go. And before we get into this year's edition, you were down a few years ago, and the timing was great for you. You went down and watched the Melbourne Cup, and if I remember correctly, you flew back and caught the Breeders' Cup here. But set the scene a little bit. What's it like? They call it the race that stops a nation.
Well, there was a period where the Melbourne Cup was like the weekend before the Breeders' Cup. So you could do both. You still can. You'd have to leave the Breeders' Cup, especially if it's held in California, and then just fly and get there on Monday. You lose the day going over. But I was able. I went 3 years in a row, and the 1 year I made it back to L.A., had a hotel, went to the track, and got to see Zenyatta win the Classic. So that must have been 09. But then it's gotten tougher to do, and then obviously flying and travel and everything else has gotten more expensive and tougher to do. So I haven't been back, but I watch it religiously. And I do a pick of the week on Twin Spires on their blog roll. So I still follow it, and I was paying close attention Monday night.
Talk a little bit, though, about being there in the spectacle.
It's just amazing in the sense that it's not only the crowd, but it's the media coverage, everything from Saturday night, which is when they draw the race. And there's a lot of things that are still in motion heading into Saturday night, including horses that win certain races on Saturday automatically are eligible to run on Tuesday. And the old school trainers always liked doing it. They always felt that it takes the edge off the horse. They don't want a keen horse to go 2 miles. So even a somewhat tired horse that they think is better. And so you don't know the field until Saturday night. And then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, newspapers. I brought back a lot of the newspapers. And the coverage is just sensational. It's like their version of the Today Show on every network is there each morning. And, you know, the interviews, the media support, not just in Melbourne, but around the country, is just enormous. And then literally on Tuesday, you walk to the train station, it's like Sunday. There's nobody out. And the other striking thing that I haven't been to Britain or anything, but everyone is dressed like they're going to a wedding. I never saw shorts, flip-flops, sneakers, anything like that. Not just in the, you know, the fancy areas, just all over the track, because I would take the train to the races. And to show you how far behind we've fallen as a country, but just as a transportation system, they have a train that goes right into the track. I mean, it literally stops. Last stop is Flemington, and it leaves every 4 minutes from Flinders Street Station, about a half-hour ride. Oh, you miss one train, you get another one in 4 minutes. It's back and forth, and a lot of people use it. So there's a big crowd on the train, and it's reliable, and they have obviously lots of people working, lots of trains in service, stuff like that. I mean, in New York City, you know, we still can't get that straight.
Yeah, you got to love that, certainly. And as I looked at the past performances, I do marvel every year, and there were a couple this year coming out of Saturday races. So they raced out on the... they raced on November 2nd and came back Saturday, November 2nd, and came back Tuesday to go the 2 miles in the Melbourne Cup, as you kind of alluded to, a couple of them this year. But I'll tell the guys in the control room they can start running, because I called for the entire race, and at 2 miles, it's going to go a while. But I wanted to show the entire thing because it's a field of 24, and boy, when they get to the wire, there is a cavalry charge after 2 miles. But take us through your thoughts before the race, and then I don't know whether people will be able to pick it out from the shot we have, but there was a DQ from second to fourth. Master of Reality wound up second under the wire, but a little bit controversial. Winds up getting DQ'd to fourth under Frankie Dettori. But the winner, people will be able to pick out, sneaks up the rail, Vow and Declare. So again, we're into the race a little bit now, but again, at 2 miles, it'll take a while. Give us your thoughts, as I say, coming into the race and then as they came down under the wire.
Well, as you can see, nobody wanted to lead. And you don't want to restrain your horse too hard, because then the horse is going to fight the restraint, and you're not going to have energy when you need it late in the race. But really, no one wanted to lead. Frankie was willing to go. So Frankie had Master Reality up close. I had picked the Prince of Aaron, the 12, and he got a nice trip. He was sitting third, fourth most of the race.
And I should say, I'll just alert people that Vow and Declare, the eventual winner, is number 23. So people can look for that chicklet.
And a very, very bright chestnut that was very flashy. And the commentary before the race, and what they call the mounting yard, when the horses go out on the track, was all positive on number 23. Now, 23 doesn't mean he drew post 23. He actually drew post 21. But... The post positions don't have anything to do with the program, though. But he got a perfect trip up the inside, because what happens is everyone turns for home and they all swing out, and the inside sometimes opens. Now, earlier in the day, it was raining pretty good there. The track was soft. It got upgraded a little bit as the day went on, and I think the inside got a little bit better as the day went on. So Craig Williams, who has never won a Melbourne Cup, this was his first, was able to come up the inside. Frankie has the lead, just like he's had it with God knows how many Group 1 winners this year. He's had 18, I think, this year. Most of them were on the lead in the deep stretch, and he managed to hold off the closer. But Frankie subtly ducked into the inside, and Wayne Lord and Il Paradiso, riding in Michael Tabor's colors, which we've seen on Thunder Gulch, horses like that, he's making his big move. Frankie shuts him off, little chain reaction into the winner, who gets turned sideways. My jock stands up at the wire thinking he won the race, and then he quickly realizes, oh, there's a couple other horses to my inside. Maybe I didn't. So they had just a tremendous finish. I mean, if you were first, you were as close to being first as you were to being eighth. The Japanese horse, Mare de Glace, had a phenomenal late run as the prize baby. Finch, the Judmon horse, who ran well in the Caulfield Cup, he was right there in the deep stretch. And last year's winner, Cross Counter, he was coming on strong, but, you know, the pace did not help those type horses. When the pace was slow and the ground wasn't as soft as it was earlier in the day, I think it compromised those horses. So the first few horses raced prominently, and then Il Paradiso was closer. They take Frankie down from second, place him fourth. So, in effect, Aidan O'Brien claimed against Joseph O'Brien. Aidan's yet to win the Melbourne Cup. Joseph won it 2 years ago. So Joseph gets DQ'd back to fourth. They move me up to second, paid $18.40 to place.
Nice.
And just a wild scramble. Frankie got 9 days suspension. Last year, Hugh Bowman got 42-day suspension for a couple of incidents in the race. So they don't fool around with the riders. And they had a long, lengthy inquiry. The riders go into a room. They sit there. They talk to the stewards. They get questions. Most of them didn't think it was a big deal. But the stewards decided it did affect Il Paradiso's chances. So they took down Master of Reality. So kind of a wild scramble at the finish. And this is exciting. Exciting a race 2 miles.
Yeah, two miles to see that kind of cavalry charge there. And the horse sneaks up the inside. Vowen Declare, he had run second in the Caulfield Cup. Your horse, Prince of Aaron, third in the race last year, right?
Yes.
And so he was a good second. Again, moved up to second. El Paradiso runs third. And Master of Reality, again, DQ'd to fourth in there. And I was reading kind of an incredible story, and I'll have it linked on Equidaily. I don't think I put it up yet, but subsequent to the race, there was a story in some of the Australian newspapers. A young guy was out on his first date, and they went someplace and they bet the Melbourne Cup. Essentially, he bet a superfecta, and they watched the race, and he doesn't win the superfecta. And so they go to lunch, and I guess during the course of the lunch, his first date kind of dissolved, where the woman essentially said, you know, I don't think this is going to work out. At which point he turned his attention to the later races, fired up his phone, and at that point realized with the DQ, he'd won $750,000. So it turned out to be a pretty good date either way.
Yeah. did she turn around and come back?
The article said she kind of stuck around for another couple hours. So... I wanted a chance to show the race because after 2 miles, just a nice ding-dong battle, a little bit of controversy, but the winner in there, Vowen Declare, sneaking up the inside. Also, Dick, wanted some of your thoughts on the Breeders' Cup, and while we talk, going to take a look first at the Breeders' Cup turf. We're going to watch number 9, Bricks and Mortar, get it done, as he normally does. He knows kind of right where the finish line is, chart margin of a head. And Bricks and Mortar in the Breeders' Cup turf finishes up an undefeated season. I'm assuming you're on the same page. He's got to be horse of the year, right?
I was on with Steve the other day. That was my knee-jerk reaction, yep. Now, I don't vote until all the races are run, including the Malibu and races like that. But, yeah, he has to be the leader in the clubhouse because he went on, you know, he did something he hadn't done all year. He went a mile and a half. You know, he's been running mile and a quarter races for the most part. And Chad made the bold move of trying another, you know, quarter mile, and he was able to see it out. Not the greatest contingent of Euros. I mean, Anthony Van Dyck had won the Epsom Derby, but had done really nothing since then. Magical didn't make the trip. She would have been real good.
Yeah.
In the filly and mare turf. But it wasn't the greatest contingent. So normally you can kind of dismiss the Americans in the turf races. Well, this, you know, you couldn't do that. The Americans are real good in the turf race. But Bricks and Mortar, Chad, Irad, we've seen it many times, and the world got to see it on Saturday.
Yeah, again, 6 for 6, 5 of those grade ones. So it was a pretty good campaign for him. And as I say, it just seems – and I'm with you. I don't count out. We still have – the better part of a couple of months of racing, and something fluky could happen, but I think it would take a fluky kind of situation to knock him out at this point. The older division, I'm interested to how this is going to shake out. Let's take a look at the finish of the Classic. It will be number 10, Vino Rosso, over number 8, McKinsey, who just, boy, McKinsey was in a bridesmaid role this year. I took him. I had these two flip-flop with my picks. I thought McKinsey was the best older horse this year, despite the number of second place finishes, but he winds up second again. Vino Rosso looks pretty good winning. He He is certainly a contender for older horse, but I wonder if the Eclipse voters won't also take a very close look at Matoli after what happened on the weekend.
Well, I was on with Steve a couple of days before the Breeders' Cup. He was broadcasting from out there, and I said, this is not your father's Santa Anita main track. This track is deep. It's tiring. And I thought it was going to favor or not hurt the East Coast and Midwest horses like it usually would do when it's, you know, rock hard and fast as could be. So I have a negative opinion of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, just year in, year out. I don't think it's a good preparation for the Classic. But this year, with Code of Honor and Vino Rosso, it turns out it was. Vino Rosso had the win over the track, so that helped. He liked 10 furlong. And this was a real 10 furlong test. This wasn't a race where you could get a mile and an eighth horse like McKenzie and squeeze another furlong out of him. The track wasn't going to let you do that. So Vino Rosso really had it all his own way. Code of Honor just never lifted a leg.
Yeah.
Just didn't do much. And it wasn't just the tiring nature of the track. The kickback was severe because they added so much cushion to the track. The horses that were in behind in the dirt races, they're getting splattered.
Yeah, I don't know whether you saw or whether you follow Twitter, but speaking of Steve, if folks can go to Bick's Twitter feed, and he posted a picture from one of the photographers that day commenting on the kickback, and he had a picture, a close-up of kind of the head and shoulders of a horse who was somewhere in the back of the pack, and it looked like it was snowing. The kickback was so heavy.
Yeah, it was.
And so
it was, and they watered the track. I mean, I kept watching water trucks go by, and the track seemed to be watered well, but all that extra cushion in the interest of safety made it a very different track. So what happened was you had a lot of non-effort, like Dunbar Road. I still can't explain how bad Dunbar Road ran in the distaff. After Blue Prize comes back and wins the distaff, and they were all in it together in the spinster, how does Dunbar Road just run that bad, going a distance that should be in her favor? But she just didn't grab it, and just some did, some didn't. And the problem for handicapping was trying to figure out which horses were going to get a hold of the track. And it wasn't necessarily running style either. It wasn't necessarily closes were going to do better than anybody else. So Vino Rosso, a deserving winner, and nice to see Todd win a big one since Chad kind of knocked him off his perch here the last couple of years in New York. He takes home the big prize.
Yeah, Vino Rosso and Mike Rapoli and company get it done with Vino Rosso. Another one I wanted to show, Covfefe. I've liked her all year long. I took a little shot against with Come Dancing in this race, and I think those are both the storylines in that kickoff to the Breeders' Cup action on Saturday, Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Covfefe is going to be the number one, and as I say, I put her underneath under Come Dancing. Come Dancing is going to be the number four horse. Boy, she disappointed. You know, you mentioned Dunbar Road and Code of Honor. I suppose also you could throw in Sister Charlie and Midnight Bijou, although they ran well in defeat. But some of these horses, including as we're seeing there with Come Dancing, just kind of fade out of the picture in the Filly and Mayer Sprint. Covfefe looked great. Come Dancing, again, another head scratcher on the card.
Yeah, I mean, Sister Charlie was on turf, and that was kind of a crazy race when the one horse opens up 10 lengths and, you know, the closers are coming, but they're still, you know, way behind, and that's a tough race for her. And she, you know, she had every right to throw in a little bit of a dull effort after a long campaign. But Come Dancing, no. Dunbar Road, no. Code of Honor, no. They just didn't put out. They're not even close to their normal effort. Talk about 02X. This is 02 capital X.
Yeah, it was again. There were some fabulous performances and some head scratchers. I mentioned Matoli. He was very good on the day as well. Let's go back to Friday, though, and talk about one other disappointment, and obviously Dennis's Moment. And again, I haven't linked on Equidaily. Chad Harmon had a nice sequence on his Twitter feed of Dennis's Moment coming out of the gate and going to his knees. And that just kind of compromised his chances completely. But coming out of that, I've been saying the last couple of days, that threw the potential two-year-old Eclipse into complete array. But I think it maybe puts Tis the Law in the driver's seat. Jack Knowlton and Sakatoga heading down to the Kentucky Jockey Club. I think a win there puts them right in the front row for a two-year-old Eclipse.
Yeah, that might be enough. I was really looking forward to Dennis's moment. That's a shame. And we've had how many two-year-olds this year that stumble, lose their rider? I mean, we've had a lot of crazy incidents at the start of these races. He's going to have to somehow get it together, leaving the gate all in one piece.
And he had been working so well, I think a lot of people were looking at him and expecting a good effort.
Oh, yeah, he seemed to like track, and it looked like all systems go until the gate opened.
Yeah, it was they're off, you lose kind of a situation. Dick, we'll wrap it up. We appreciate the comments. And, again, I wanted to pull you in so I could get a chance to look at that Melbourne Cup, which was a fabulous race again this year, and, again, get some of the Breeders' Cup thoughts. But, as always, appreciate the thoughts, and we'll talk again.
All right, you're welcome, son.
Dick Powell, and again, I did want to show that Melbourne Cup, 2 miles, 24 horses, and there were, four or five of them right on the wire, and then, you know, another length back, another four or five. Just a really great race Monday night our time, Tuesday down in Australia. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Dan Smith, Senior Media Coordinator at Del Mar, he'll give us a little fill-in on the upcoming Del Mar meet. Kicked off yesterday, goes until December 1st. So up next, a little Del Mar preview. Stay tuned.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flicks Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you've come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Happy to be joined now by Dan Smith, the Senior Media Coordinator at Del Mar. We are actually taping this on Friday, opening day, as we're into the opening weekend now at Del Mar. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Seth?
Very good. Happy to have you on board, because we all appreciate the product that Del Mar puts out, and we're up in the Saratoga area, and usually in the summertime, we're kind of head-to-head. I want to make a trip out there. Just looking across the street from the beach, I like the whole scenario, and I'll have to make it work in the fall at some point. But before we get into the fall meet specifically, just talk a little bit about the Del Mar community and their support for the racetrack, because, as I say, we're up in the Saratoga area, and I always say what's nice about Saratoga, we broadcast from the backstretch every morning during the racing season, and I always say it's what's outside the fences that makes it unique. You go downtown and you're in a restaurant and people are talking about the Daily Double tomorrow or the Exacta they hit today, and I get the feeling the Del Mar area is very much like that, very supportive of your product, maybe even more so during the fall meet.
exactly right, Seth. And Del Mar a long time ago was called the Saratoga of the West. And so there are definite similarities. And, you know, I've never been to Saratoga because I've worked here since 1964, every summer since 64. And I guess I'm going to have to retire to get back to Saratoga. But the Del Mar community has been very supportive since Bing and Pat O'Brien founded the track back in 1937. And you're right. I mean, you go to the barber shop and someone says, hey, you been to the races yet? I say, no, I got to make it, you know. So there's a definite feeling of wanting to come to the races before it goes away for a while.
Talk a little bit about the summer versus the fall. The fall meet, relatively new, and it seems like probably a little more low-key. Obviously, we understand that up here because summer at Saratoga is big because it's summer. The kids are out of school and whatnot, so it's a different dynamic. But talk a little bit about summer versus the fall meet.
Well, it's definitely a different vibe. You know, as you say, you get a lot of vacationers, and San Diego area is definitely a tourist destination because there are a lot of other things to do when you come to this area, like the zoo and SeaWorld and the beach and a whole bunch of stuff you can do. And so there's a different vibe. And whereas in the summertime, post time is for the first race is 2 o'clock. For the fall meet, it's 12:30, and then it gets dark around 5 o'clock. So, it's a different feel to it. The fall meeting is called the Bing Crosby season, honoring Bing Crosby. And basically, the major races are on the grass. So, it has a different feel to it, whereas the big races during the summer are mostly on the dirt, including the Pacific Classic. But anyway, the fall meet is a good meet. It's a tough competition from football, and I'm sure everyone feels that from college football on Saturdays and pro football on Sundays. But the racing is good. It's top drawer. The winner of the Matriarch last year was Uni, and she just won a Breeders' Cup race, and we're hopeful she comes back for the Matriarch on our closing weekend. That'd be fun.
Break down the season a little bit for us. Again, opening day is Friday, November 8th. How long's the season last, and what are the race days, days of the week-wise?
Well, we started with Friday, and then we go Saturday, Sunday, and then we race Thursday through Sunday for another 3 weeks. So the total, it's a 15-day meet. It's a short meet. It's 15 days, and the normal thing for the week is Thursday through Sunday. And post time for the first race every day is 12:30, with the exception of Thanksgiving Thursday, when we'll move it up to 11 o'clock.
And you already kind of alluded to some of the nice stakes races you have coming up, a couple of grade ones on the schedule as well. Talk a little bit about the stakes action.
Okay, well, there are 14 stakes races on the during the meet, and 9 of them are graded, and we have 2 grade one races, the Hollywood Derby for $300,000 on November 30th, and the Matriarch, which I mentioned before, for Phillies and Mares on December 1, and that's closing day. So, it's the racing is good. The weather is outstanding. You know, you couldn't find better weather. So it's a fun meet. It really is.
Hollywood Turf Cup is the day before the Hollywood Derby, that Thanksgiving weekend. That's a grade two, but it certainly will attract a lot of familiar runners for people. So some great racing ahead as far as stakes action. The everyday card, I was looking at the first couple of days, Baffert with a nice couple of first-time starters that maybe folks will want to look at, and you can expect more of those during the meet. But let's talk a little bit about the human element. On the jockey side and the trainer side, I pulled up the stats, the Equibase stats from the summer meet. Doug O'Neill was the leading trainer last summer. Peter Miller, Baltus, John Sadler, D'Amato underneath. Peter Miller, of course, having a nice weekend, Breeders' Cup weekend. Doug O'Neill, certainly a familiar name. And on the jockey side, a guy who has really kind of taken off out in Southern California, Flavien Prott was the leading jockey during the summer meet. And one that has been interesting to watch, Abel Cedillo, who he was third at the summer meet, but he kind of caught my attention at this most recent Santa Anita meet, and I guess had come down from Northern California. But talk a little bit about some of the leading trainers and jockeys people might want to keep an eye on.
Well, you mentioned Flavien Prott, and he's going to, he's emerged because he's won races not just in California, but across the country. So he's a legitimate, he's probably the leading rider in California right now. And then not far behind is Braden Van Dyke. And, of course, you have guys like Mike Smith and Kent DeSormo and you mentioned Abel Cedillo. And I had heard about Abel Cedillo from Matt Dinnerman. He used to work here, and he's now the public address announcer at Golden Gate Fields. And he was telling me this guy can ride. And he was exactly right. And he's not a young guy. You know, he's like 30 years old. But he came here, and he's solid. He is solid. And I think he's still flying a little bit below the radar, not as far below the radar as he was before, because people are starting to realize that he can ride. And he's riding for good people. And he doesn't make mistakes. You know, he puts horses in good position, and he can finish, too. So he's legitimate. There's no doubt about it. And then, you know, Peter Miller's got to be the favorite to win the training title here at the fall because he's done it so many times. And he's probably loaded for bear again, and he's coming off a big Breeders' Cup. So you'd have to make him the favorite. And then Doug O'Neill's not far behind, and John Sadler and some of the guys. Bob Baffert doesn't so much go for a leading trainer anymore. He's kind of he doesn't run that many horses anymore. But, you know, he's always a factor in stakes races for sure.
Yeah, again, names that we're all familiar with, and we enjoy the Southern California product here on the East Coast because it's kind of that bridge time for us, and we can focus on it a little bit. So we're looking forward to the Del Mar meet. You mentioned Bing Crosby earlier. Is it like a tradition? He has that song, right? The Turf Meets the Surf, and doesn't that show up opening day or at some point during the meet?
Oh, yeah, We played before the first race, and we played after the last race.
There you go. I knew it was a regular feature out there. And I will also say, I've kind of said it before, I love the ocean. I spend a lot of time up in Maine in the summertime, and that's one reason I want to get out there to the track. And we have a shot up now that I pulled off your website, kind of a shot looking at the beach, a couple of guys carrying surfboards, and in the background, the Del Mar Grandstand. Just talk a little bit about the area, and you're across the street from the beach, and it's like the meeting of two of my favorite things, beach and racetrack.
Well, that beauty shot is designed to make people envious on the East Coast when they're, you know, freezing at 32 degrees and things like that. So we hope that's a lure for people to come out here and they can still go to the beach in November. But, you know, Del Mar is a really nice little town, got great restaurants, and there are great restaurants all around here, just like at Saratoga, you know. And so it's a great area to come here. And like I said, there's a lot of other tourist attractions. So you don't have to just come for the races. You can come for all the rest of the stuff. So it's I feel blessed to have worked here for so long.
Yeah, and you say you've been there since the mid-60s. Give us some of the highlights, some of your favorite memories, maybe some PAC Classic results or whatnot. But what are some of your favorite memories from Del Mar over the years?
Well, you know, I go back to the mid-60s when Native Diver was the big horse.
Oh, sure.
The big black horse, and he was fast, and he was spectacular, you know. And he was a hell of a horse. He was the first California-bred millionaire. And, you know, starting in the late 60s and the 70s, Del Mar started to come on and started to put some money back into the plant, and things took off. Then we had Bill Shoemaker came back in 1970 to break Johnny Longden's record. And then you had riders like Lafitte Pincai and Chris McCarron, Eddie Delahousie, and those guys came to California to ride year-round. So that kind of, you know, things have snowballed. And, of course, John Mabee, who was the president of Del Mar Thoroughbred Club, he thought that Del Mar had reached the stage where it could a $1 million race was justified. And that's when the Pacific Classic was inaugurated in 1991. And the first winner just had to be his horse, who was a three-year-old. And the race was on the level.
Yeah.
But, and he was a good horse. Best Doll was a very good horse. So we've seen a lot of good horses over the years, you know, Silver Charm and horses that came out of the futurity and things like that. And so it's been good. I'd have a hard time. I remember Flawlessly and Charlie Whittingham and Ferdinand and all those good horses that he had. And John Henry trained here, but he never ran here. And the same with Sunday Silence. Sunday Silence, when he went back and beat Easy Goer in the Classic, the Breeders' Cup Classic at Gulfstream, he worked a mile in 1:33.3, which is like two-fifths of a second off the track record, Patrick Valenzuela. So anyway, there have been a lot of highlights, Seth.
Yeah, as you were talking, I pulled up the list of Pacific Classic winners, and one of my favorite horses and one of the all-time best claims, Lava Man, won in 2006. But what was notable, and you mentioned Pat Valenzuela, P-Val, what's notable is the human names you've gotten to see out there over the years. Because obviously in New York at Saratoga, guys like Cordero over the years, John Velasquez currently but over the years, Eddie Maple and names like that. But you go out on the West Coast and look back, you got to see people like Pat Valenzuela, as I say, but Gary Stevens, Alex Solis, Chris McCarron, Garrett Gomez.
Yeah, right.
Big human names on the Del Mar side. And I'm looking at the list of Pacific Classic winners, but obviously they had nice careers out there otherwise as well.
Well, like Candy, you know, Candy Ride, it was a hell of a horse and was gone on to be a tremendous stallion, too. And
ridden by Julie Crone that day.
That's right. And Julie Crone lives about 10 miles from Del Mar. He's married to Jay Hovde, who now works for the Blood Horse. So there've been a lot of highlights. I have a lot of good memories of great horses that I've seen at Del Mar. I've been very lucky.
And just a couple more things before we let you go. I know safety is a big issue out there in Southern California. That's a story. You guys had, as far as safety, a great meet in the summer, and so we're anticipating more of that. And it was noted, one of the articles I read, maybe not getting as much work in the mornings because it's a little bit different summer versus fall. Not as many horses stabled there because it's a shorter meet, and so a lot of them are vanned down from Santa Anita. What is, for people on the East Coast who may not be familiar with the geography, what's the distance from Del Mar up to Santa Anita?
A little less than 100 miles, you know, taking about an hour and a half, hour 45, depending on traffic, from Santa Anita to Del Mar. So we'll have about 350 horses on the grounds here, whereas during the summertime we'll have 1,800, 1,900 horses. And horses would be vanning in from Santa Anita, San Luis Rey Downs, which is maybe 20 miles away, and also Los Alamitos. So, you know, there's the reason we have a few people come down for the, you know, guys like Richard Mandela, Bob Hess, Bill Spar, and they'll come down and have their horses stabled here. But for the most part, they'll be off the ground. They'll be elsewhere.
And we should mention again before we let you go that 2021, the Breeders' Cup returns. I'm sure a lot of anticipation and excitement there. What was the feeling for the first Breeders' Cup that was at Del Mar a couple years back?
Oh, it was really exciting. It was great. And it went off without a hitch and fantastic racing. It was a lot of fun. And we're very much looking forward to 2021.
Yeah, we had a couple of locals who were out there that we're associated with who really enjoyed it. Out at Del Mar, just because the facility is so nice and to have it out there and get a chance to see a Breeders' Cup out there.
I think we're hoping Chad Brown sends a few horses out again, you know?
I think you stand a very good chance. Just mow the turf course correctly, and I'm sure you'll see some Chad horses out there. Dan, appreciate the visit, and we are on the opening weekend of Del Mar going through December 1st. Lots of great stakes action, as we mentioned, some nice grade ones that'll play out as well. Dan Smith, Senior Media Coordinator for Del Mar. Appreciate the visit. Good luck to you and everyone out at Del Mar.
Hey, Seth, you got an open invitation to come out.
Like I say, one of these fall meets, maybe 2021, maybe Breeders' Cup. That may be, I'm marking it on my calendar right now.
That might be the time.
Huh? All right, sounds good. Dan, appreciate the visit.
See you now. Okay, bye-bye.
Dan Smith from Del Mar. Again, it's opening weekend at Del Mar. Thanks to Dan Smith. Recorded that yesterday. Obviously, with the time difference, it was a little bit easier to catch him before the races yesterday. But Del Mar underway, starting with yesterday's program. Goes through December 1st. I mentioned the nice stakes, but just to alert you, it'll be that Thanksgiving weekend that the stakes really ramp up. There's good stakes action in the meantime. But Thanksgiving weekend, the day after Thanksgiving Day itself is the red carpet, but the day after Thanksgiving, Friday, November 29th, Hollywood Turf Cup. That's Saturday, November 30th, the Hollywood Derby, the Seabiscuit, the Jimmy Durante for two-year-old fillies, the Cecil B. DeMille for the two-year-olds. And these are all turf races. And also on Sunday, the Cecil B. DeMille is actually Sunday, December 1st, closing day, as is the Matriarch, a grade one event. And again, the Hollywood Derby on Saturday for the three-year-olds on turf and the Matriarch for the fillies and mares on turf. That's Saturday and Sunday at Thanksgiving weekend, both grade one events that are sure to attract not just nice fields, but nice fields from that'll certainly include runners from, you know, east of the Mississippi, given the prestige and the purse of those races. So again, that Thanksgiving weekend, nice stakes turf action that'll round out and end the Del Mar meet going from now until that Sunday, December 1st. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, some news and notes, and also wanted to take a look at one race from last weekend because it is certainly notable on the two-year-old side. So as I say, we'll take a break. Come back. More on Racing Across America right after this.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of branch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, I wanted to go back and show a race from last weekend. It was last Sunday, so obviously we had kind of wrapped up all the Racing Across America action. But the Nashua from last Sunday at Aqueduct for two-year-olds, it's probably a little late for this one to chase an eclipse. I suppose it's still possible. Remsen is floating out there, I suppose. But this is a two-year-old to watch. And so we're going to show the entire Nashua here. Grade 3 event, the one-turn mile down at Aqueduct for $150,000. And it was a nice little field. Maru in here was already a stakes winner. That horse, the number 8, will run second. The favorite was number 10, Ashar, the 9-5 favorite. It was Kieran. It was Shadwell, a horse that had won the career debut pretty decisively with a nice buyer number. So those were a couple of the contenders. And again, there was stakes quality with Maru. Lebda, the number 6 horse, was coming out of a third in the Iroquois behind Dennis's Moment and Scabbard. So again, it was a field that had some legitimate talent in here. But the second time starter for Mike Trombetta, Independence Hall, yikes, won the career debut down at Parks. I had the horse at the bottom of my mix just because I wasn't sure what to make of a horse debuting at Parks. But Trombetta, based down there in the Mid-Atlantic, trains over at Fairhill. So he has the option of going many places and opted for an $82,000 maiden special weight event at Parks and won that decisively. Comes back in the second career start and tries the Nashua last Sunday. Constitution turning out to be a nice little interesting sire. The dam, Kalahari Cat, had produced a number of multiple winners. She was getting a little long in the tooth, though. Her first winner, I believe, hit the racetrack 10 years ago in 2009. She's produced since then a bunch of, as I say, multiple winners. So there was a little bit of breeding that was interesting. Would the horse live up to that promising Parks debut and career start number 2? Jose Ortiz attracted to jump on board. As I say, I wanted to show this because it's a very interesting two-year-old race. Take a look at last Sunday's Nashua and the performance by the Mike Trombetta runner, number 5, Independence Hall, in only start number 2.
Quickly challenged by Independence Hall, and down at the rail, it is Spycraft as they race up the chute. It's Spycraft and Independence Hall. Those two heads apart for the lead. They've got a length and a half. And right behind, it's Ashar, Lebda, Americanus, and Live Your Beast Life. And then comes Meru, who's racing in sixth. Chase Tracker is now back in seventh. Then it's a break of two to Famished, who's running next in eighth as the field continues along here. And the leader here is Spycraft by three-quarters of a length. Independence Hall is in second. Ashar in the clear on the outside in third. Americanus down at the rail in fourth. Live Your Beast Life in between horses in fifth. Lebda is sixth. Then it's Meru on the outside in seventh, followed by Chase Tracker. Famished is at the back. The half was running 45 and two-fifths seconds. Independence Hall is in between horses and has now taken over the lead as Spycraft drops back down towards the rail. Ashar is on the outside, and Meru is under the whip here with a quarter of a mile to the finish. Independence Hall has the lead into the stretch. Three quarters went in one, 10-1. Independence Hall has opened up on the field here. Independence Hall has a seven-length lead. Now more than that, Independence Hall is pouring it on here in the Nashua Stakes. A tremendous effort here by Independence Hall, won by maybe a dozen lengths. Meru was second, then Chase Tracker and Famished, and the time for the mile was 1 minute, 34 and 3/5 seconds.
John Embriel nailed it. He said maybe a dozen lengths. It was a chart margin of 12 and a quarter. Independence Hall kind of sits in a little bit of a stalking position behind the pace setter, Spycraft. And then you don't like to be in that in-between position coming around the turn and into the stretch. And Ashar, the favorite, came up and kind of put Independence Hall in between. But Independence Hall and Jose Ortiz never let Ashar get up and really put him in the in-between position. Ashar Hall was always kind of at least half a length behind on the turn. And then as they got closer to the end of the turn, just asked Independence Hall, and as he turned into the stretch, you saw him open up there. Wow, it's just a phenomenal performance. Again, this was only start number two off a big maiden win down at Parks. We'll see what they do next with Independence Hall, but that was a pretty nice looking two-year-old performance. So that'll be a two-year-old to see what they do with the remainder of this season if they continue on, but certainly to keep our eyes on going into next year as a three-year-old. Independence Hall from trainer Mike Trombetta. Wanted to update you going back to last week on buyer numbers coming out of the Breeders' Cup. Breeders' Cup Saturday, all pretty good numbers, all triple digits for the winners. Vino Rosso came up with a 111 buyer. Bricks and Mortar had a 104. Matoli, a 112. I think that was a career best for him. Uni, a 106. Iridesa, 105. Blue Prize, 103. Belvoir Bay, 107. Kafefi, 106. And Spun to Run, 109. So again, triple digits all around for the Saturday Breeders' Cup winners. A little lighter, but it was two-year-olds on Friday. Storm the Court, the juvenile winner, came up with an 87. British Idiom in the juvenile fillies, a 79. Four-wheel drive, 86. Sharing, 86. Instructor, who again, they think they may try dirt with in some subsequent starts to see if maybe they have a nice little three-year-old overall going into next year or after next year. But Structor came up with a 79 in the juvenile turf. So again, the number's a little lighter. But at this time of year, for two-year-olds, those are okay. Certainly the mid-80s are okay. And again, Breeders' Cup buyer figures with Matoli was the best with that 112, which I say I'm pretty sure was a career best for him. Final NTRA poll came out the beginning of the week. They wrap it up as far as the poll, the weekly poll with the Breeders' Cup. Bricks and Mortar winds up number one, the NTRA poll. And again, it seems like he is in the driver's seat for the Horse of the Year Eclipse. Matoli jumps up from number four to number two. Vino Rosso moves from number nine to number three. Midnight Bijou drops from number two to number four. The poll that came out this week had a tie in the number five position between McKinsey and Sister Charlie. McKinsey held at number five. Sister Charlie dropped from three to five. Uni was probably the biggest mover. Yeah, the biggest mover. Jumped up from number 20 to number 7. Uni Kafefi comes in from number 14 to number 8. Blue Prize, number 16 last week, number 9 in the final poll. And Maximum Security gets into the top 10 in the final poll. He had been 11 last week, winds up number 10 in the final NTRA poll of 2019. Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Spun to Run's being considered for the Cigar Mile. Owner saying we're looking at a lot of options. People are calling about the Saudi Cup, but the Cigar Mile is definitely in play. And it's going to be interesting to see. Every year, you know, we always think Breeders' Cup kind of puts the exclamation point on the year, but there's a lot of good racing. The Clark down at Churchill, as I say, those nice turf races out at Del Mar a little bit later on, Cigar Mile, Remsen at Aqueduct, the year-ending three-year-old Malibu out at Santa Anita. So there's still good action, and it's always fun to see Breeders' Cup runners. Some of them wrap it up for the year, but some of them come back and take a shot in some of these late-season races. I mean, you have a horse that's running well. Bigger outfits can kind of sit on a horse and say, hey, we'll wait till next year. Or maybe their horses are headed to a sale or whatnot. But smaller outfits, if you have a horse that's good and it ran well in the Breeders' Cup, won or ran well, and you have a horse that is in good form, there's still purse money out there. And so it'll be fun to see a horse like Spun to One coming out of a Spun to Run coming out of a Breeders' Cup victory, if they'll take a little shot maybe at the Cigar Mile. But potentially some other horses. It'll be fun to see winners or horses who ran well at the Breeders' Cup, what they might do over the next couple of months and get in another race or two, perhaps, before the end of the year. The Klarman-Lawrence Partnership runs its final horse. Seth Klarman of Klarovich Stable and Bill Lawrence, local owner. They have been partners for many years, 15 years, according to the Dave Grenig article. They're going to go out, wrap up the partnership today in the Artie Schiller down at Aqueduct with Frontier Market. They kind of went out on a high note with Bricks and Mortar. They're partnered in Bricks and Mortar. That one, again, winning at the Breeders' Cup last week and potentially winding up horse of the year. Can't wrap up the partnership on a better note than that. It was just kind of a difference in philosophy. I don't think there was anything going on other than Seth Klarman wanted to delve a little deeper and get into more horses, and Bill Lawrence wanted to step back a little bit, name in a little bit of a more select direction. And so they decided a while ago that they would move in separate ways. And so, again, today will be their last run of Frontier Market. The Artie Schiller today at Aqueduct, I went 10-9-8-1. Frontier Market is the number one horse. I put Voodoo Song on top. They started the season a little questionably at Saratoga, but I thought the last two starts in State Bred Company were okay. So I'm hoping Voodoo Song has gotten back to being Voodoo Song. So I put him on top, and then Dr. Edgar, Caribou Club. And Frontier Market belongs in the mix, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that one run very well. Certainly it'd be a fun story to see the partnership, the Klarovich Bill Lawrence partnership, go out on a high note. But as I say, they kind of already went on a high note last week. They've already got their great storyline from last week. But again, Frontier Market will be their last partnered runner this afternoon at Aqueduct in the Artie Schiller. Also wanted to go back to last weekend in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, because it was kind of a fun end for that contest, which I'm just looking, $10,000 to get in, $2,500 of that goes into the prize pool, and folks then have $7,500 to use as a live bankroll. The winner of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge last weekend, Brad Anderson of Sarasota, Florida, he came into the last race with $25,900. The article says points, but essentially dollars, because it's a live money contest. He knew he was going to have to get $140,000. That's where the leaders were sitting. So he took his entire $25,900 and bet it on Vina Rosso, who went off at 9-2. That popped him up to $145,040. That got him the winner's total, the winner's first prize of $343,000. So he walks away from the weekend, $10,000 buy-in. He walks away with $488,000 plus. Bill Chenvert of the Villages, Florida, was second, $366,000 plus. And Dick Girardi, who for years was the racing writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, still does some work for the Racing Forum and whatnot, and has been on NBC broadcasts over the years. I'm sure people are familiar with Dick. Ooh, tough. He was in the lead going into the Classic after he hit a $2,000 exact with Bricks and Mortar over 50-1 shot United. So he was in first place going into that final race, but got leapfrogged and wound up third, but still winds up with well over $250,000 in prize money. So it was a nice weekend for those fellas. But it's always fun to read what happens in the last couple of races, and particularly the last race where somebody takes a swing like that. That's why I don't like these kind of contests, because you're sitting there with $145,000, and you've kind of been playing legitimately all afternoon, and then somebody just feels like, man, I got to push all in the last race and do something completely different than they've done. And those are the rules. I'm not knocking that guy. I'm applauding him for playing by the rules and winning the contest. But I just think in contests like this where you're kind of playing and handicapping in a more logical fashion, if that's the right word, throughout the day, and then it comes down to the last race or two, and people just, I only have this much, and I'm way behind. I'm going to go all in here and do something, as I say, completely different, perhaps, than they've done all day long. But, again, that's what the rules are, so congratulations. And as I say, it does make for a kind of a fun story. Guy takes his shot and pushes all in with Vino Rosso and winds up winning the contest. So Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge in the rearview mirror. I think they have a contest, I'm virtually certain, in fact, this afternoon down at Aqueduct. They have a contest that will award one or two NHC seats. So it'll be fun to see who winds up getting the prize money down there at Aqueduct. And I think the Aqueduct contest now, the Naira contest, I think used to be they were live on site. I think they now, you can show up obviously and play live on site, but I think they also have an online version as well. Unfortunately, this one is closed. I'm pretty sure entries closed on Thursday for this one, but keep that in mind if you are a contest player. I think the Naira contest now, you can play either live on track or online. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Again, thanks to Dan Smith, Senior Media Coordinator at Del Mar, for giving us a little preview of the Del Mar meet. And also want to thank our friend Dick Powell for jumping on board and talking a little Melbourne Cup. Boy, a fun race on Monday night here, Tuesday down in Australia. 24 horses and a nice cavalry charge to the wire. Also some thoughts on the Breeders' Cup from Dick. Do want to alert you that if you are a Phonabet customer, and typically you have called the 5111 number, that number no longer is working. There are a couple of updated numbers. You see them on your screen there, 1-800-342-4287 or 518-381-2450. And at that point, you call those. Phonabet works as usual. So again, if you're a Phonabet customer, make note of those two updated phone numbers. Also want to alert you that over the weekend, 3% bonus is available on Churchill Wagers. That's today and tomorrow with your Capital OTB bet account if you're enrolled in player rewards. There are some restrictions. You can check out the website for more information, capitalotb.com. Today also a $100 online knockout challenge. Again, swing by the website for more information on the knockout challenge. Tomorrow here at the Clubhouse Racebook, it's a football Sunday. Wear a jersey, get in for free, put your name on a square, maybe a win a jersey or a food voucher. But more importantly, you can watch all the games, catch all the racing action throughout the NFL season here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. The same location you can swing by on Monday afternoon for the match bet promotion. Some of the, with the holiday, some of the more notable venues will be running, so you can stop by and catch all the racing action and enjoy a holiday Monday afternoon here at the Clubhouse Racebook on Monday, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. And programming note, we will have an OTB Live on Monday afternoon here on the network as well. I'll be on Monday afternoon to handicap some of the action. Speaking of OTB Live, I'll be back in probably about an hour and 10 or so to kick off a Saturday OTB Live. We'll have a lot of racing action on this afternoon. some nice stakes action we'll be taking a look at. As mentioned, that Artie Schiller Aqueduct and more. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we appreciate you tuning in on this Saturday morning. Stick around. Be back in a couple hours. We'll see you then. Not a couple. Be back in about, as I say, about an hour and 50. I got to keep forgetting. Daylight savings have kicked in, and so have the earlier post times at some of the tracks. So it's only about an hour and 10. We'll be back with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.